Hello and welcome to Series 11 of The Future of Drug Discovery. In this episode, Murat speaks with Abhishek Pandey, Principal Research Scientist and Pharma Discovery Group Lead at AbbVie. Abhishek's group, named Raiders, is integrating machine learning across all of AbbVie's pharma discovery working groups with the vision of improving the speed and efficiency of drug discovery. In this episode, you'll learn about Abhishek's strategy for bridging expertise from chemistry, biology, and computer science to integrate machine learning across AbbVie's pharma discovery processes. You'll also gain a key insight into Abhishek's vision for the future of drug discovery as we explore the pressing needs of the pharmaceutical industry from both a technical and social standpoint.
Hi, everyone. My name is Murat Tunaboglu, your host for the Future of Drug Discovery show. And this week, our guest is Abhishek from AbbVie. I'm sure many of you already know him or read the materials that we sent prior to this event. He's the Pharma Discovery Group Lead at AbbVie, and his group name has a very fantastic one. It's Raiders. So we get to touch upon a couple of very interesting topics. Abhishek, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me here, frankly.
We had a good first conversation, and I'm really pleased to have this opportunity to have a longer conversation right now. Would you mind telling us your version of your story? How did you come to the current role at AbbVie?
Yeah, that's actually an interesting story. And in fact, probably anybody who is doing machine learning at some decent level in the pharma world has to have some interesting story to say about their career path, because nobody exactly starts doing machine learning in pharma in their school. That's actually the reality of scenario. All of the current trend of machine learning actually started around 2011, 2012. Most of the people were actually in their schools doing grad school or something like that, who are actually at my peers around different companies. So most of us actually started doing machine learning in imaging world, actually. So I started there as well. I was, in fact, in electrical and computer engineering department, which is totally different side of the aisle. I guess my career goal should be to go into Google or Meta maybe. But I guess I chose this. Or rather, this one chose me because, frankly, I had worked before. After my undergrad, I used to work for a company called Toshiba, although you guys know already. It was a fairly big-sized company, and we were doing really challenging work. But it was kind of boring for me. Toshiba, I was a software engineer, just coding whatever you give me, frankly. So I started, said that let's do something more challenging. How about grad school? Like, okay, let's do grad school. Because I kind of like research in my undergrad. So I was like, okay, let's see how far I can go. But of course, I didn't want to take the full plunge. So I thought, let's do first master's to see like how does it feel like to be in grad school. So I first did my master's, and then I realized, oh, I like this. I like this kind of research kind of work. And then I was more onto a signal processing, imaging kind of person actually during my master's, and then translating into PhD, again, imaging. And in the imaging world, exactly at that point, there was a big explosion of like machine learning algorithms coming in its field. And that's where I started actually using machine learning. And there were like so many potentials that we realized that it can have. But if you see out there, it was still an academic exercise at that particular point of time. People were not exactly doing it in industry at that particular moment. So when I graduated around like 16, 17 from my grad school, at that time, some of the very early startup companies were actually trying to deploy some early versions of models that they can use and they can sell to their vendors, saying that, oh, we use some really cool thing, which is called machine learning. And it uses like a lot of deep learning kind of work. So that's where I started. I started in a startup called Tempus Labs. It's a downtown Chicago company. Headquartered there, of course, it's in lots of different places. I was their employee zero for machine learning team. We literally were exploring with me that we can actually use machine learning in field of oncology or precision medicine or not. And the first time when actually I built algorithm, I surprised myself because I was doing it with no hopes. My PhD wasn't actually in machine learning, it was in imaging. So I was just doing it because I think I was interested in this and I wanted to do something in machine learning, but I had zero hopes that it'll actually give you such good results. And that actually opened my eyes that this is a field, if done right, can actually explore a lot of doors. And the doors which were never there, actually, it's creating those doors. And then essentially, as I was working through Tempus Labs, I decided that there are lots of places where engineers can make impact. I decide to do it in healthcare because frankly, I see my algorithms, at least even if it's a tiny delta bit, impacting patients who are suffering through disease. And that's where I decided that I'll stay in this field, actually. It doesn't matter who offers me what, because that happens a lot, actually, in this field, especially if you are early believers of machine learning and early adopters and deployers of it, then there are a lot of people who will approach you for like, do this, do that. I'm pretty sure all of them are very interesting applications. But as I said, I chose my thing to be healthcare. And then as Tempus was a startup company, we were exhausted with data after a certain period of time. Like after 3 years, we were like, we are out of data. All the publicly available data set is used. What do we do now? So of course, we made some collaborations with other hospitals out there and stuff like that. But the pain of actually that data coming in and all of that, I was like, it's all right. People who comes behind me can take that. Let's move to a different place, which is essentially AbbVie, because I knew that AbbVie is a big pharma company. It would have all the data possible in the world. What would a machine learning scientist need? A GPU and a lot of data. That's what I needed as well. And that's how I came into AbbVie. And then essentially, I joined in as a principal research scientist. And after 2-3 months, I was given a responsibility of a very small team. We were like two or three people actually at that particular moment. And then we just kept delivering. We were actually changing the basic paradigm of how people do their things. And that's when like people started noticing that, oh, this is something that is changing how we do drug discovery. I mean, we should take a heed of it. We should learn what actually is doing. In fact, we should be part of this cycle so that we can actually go in line with whatever is developed. So essentially, that's how all of this started, as experiment, as exploration. But I think I'm a firm believer that there are a lot of doors that are still not there that can be opened through methods like machine learning. I'm not saying machine learning is the only method, but there are methods out there which are technical, coding-based, software-based, that actually can explore a lot of doors that people have not explored in pharma.
Thank you. And when you look back right now, you mentioned that it was 2016. There were a lot of startups noticing that ML could make a difference, either improve the processes or could be positioned as an enabling technology to do something that, you know, you couldn't do before. And then you work in a limited data regime, then you're moving to AbbVie, obviously, practically unlimited resources and so on. How do you compare, contrast them? I know you said that you were the first ML engineer that joined the Tempus. How was the situation at AbbVie?
Well, frankly speaking, there was no team in AbbVie when I joined in as well. So it's very similar. It was very similar. In fact, I still run my team in AbbVie very similar to how I used to run it in Tempus, which is almost like a startup. I just consider my team as a well-funded startup. We don't have to go to somebody to actually say that, please fund my projects, because they have already bought in. We have shown them enough results that they are like, okay, sure, we will be part of it for sure. So we have crossed that hurdle, initial hurdle, which is a leadership hurdle of like, why are we doing this? Shouldn't we be actually buying something out there from vendors? I think we have crossed that hurdle that there's no way something out there can be as good as what we can develop internally and the knowledge that we gain out of that process. Of course, I'm not saying that people are not doing great stuff out there. There are a lot of great stuff actually. And we can't be everywhere. So there are still a lot of vendors that actually work with AbbVie. We help them, facilitate them, make sure that actually everything is right. This is something that we can't do right now. So if you want it right now, then you should go for the vendor and stuff like that, for sure. But I think that initial hurdle is very, very important to cross. And as I said, we still run it like a startup, very much like that. There is fire every day and we have to douse the fire.
We had the pleasure to talk to a few people in big pharma, you know, running similar teams. The backlog is huge. You can apply this technology to target discovery or validation or generating novel compounds or optimizing them, maybe even configure clinical trials to better outcomes and so on. How do you manage them?
That's actually a good question. And that's an ongoing question, frankly. There's no exact answer to it. There's no exact science to that as well. Everything is important in drug discovery, right? So how we did was essentially break the problem statement into like 2 or 3 smaller problems. If you're trying to solve drug discovery, maybe like for small molecule, you can't do everything. So let's choose that you will actually build algorithms that will be based on target as a pillar. So all the algorithms that you'll build for target essentially will go to that pillar. There'll be one algorithm you'll be building for molecules, either like PADME prediction, any property prediction, any kind of thing essentially will belong to that particular pillar. And then the third one, which is essentially now that you have the target and the molecule, assuming that, how would you actually develop biomarkers and essentially say that these are the cohort of patients that will respond to the treatment versus the other cohort which will not respond to the treatment? Of course, there is no way you can actually do everything of everything. So we only choose projects which are most impactful actually. So suppose if there is a new algorithm to come up with for targets, we will try to do that rather than actually saying that now I'm working in oncology in some version of cancer, non-small cell lung cancer. Can you tell me what would be the target for this? That's a very precise problem statement that essentially discovery teams should be empowered to actually solve. I can give you tools to solve that big problem, but you should be empowered to actually solve it. And that's an ongoing process essentially. So we are helping discovery and dev side hire those machine learning people within themselves. They're not purely machine learning people, but they're like half chemist, half machine learning, essentially a machine learning oriented chemist or something like that. So essentially a machine learning oriented biologist or something like that, that essentially help take some of these algorithms and make it useful in their realm of things, essentially.
In your story, you were saying that there was a moment where you had this, ML could be really valuable, you know, coming from image processing background to see that actually you created some value. You have now a function that an application that might help some people out there. Are you at liberty to talk any of the improvements that you guys did at Adway?
Sure. Actually, everything that we did was in many ways informed because how normally like people, bench scientists and chemists and other folks within pharma world behave is that they'll try to do it once. And if it doesn't work and to their liking, they're like, oh, it doesn't work. That's it. It's a machine learning is as much a research as whatever they're doing in their bench work is something that is still has to be learned actually as a process. Because almost everybody thinks that it's a magic wand that will solve all your problems. And that's not true, actually. There are some problems you can solve right now. There are some problems you can't because of multiple reasons, not just this or that. So it was one of the first algorithms that we actually improved was essentially like property prediction kind of thing, which is super easy task in general, right? Because you have a lot of data that exists out there. Can you make the greatest and the best algorithm that exists out there out of it? And then within a period of like a couple of years, we took it from the very basic machine learning kind of work to the state of our NeurIPS kind of conference kind of work, actually, which essentially is a very important exercise that you did in general within this field is that normally if you are lagging in some field, for example, in this one, machine learning, have we suppose lagging in this field, you don't need to exactly go all the way from A to Z one by one. You can actually hire somebody who knows Z, who can directly jump you from, of course, A to Z. Of course, there are a lot of background has to be set for to reach you Z, like your data should be there, it should be clean enough, all of those exercises you have to do. But I think it's a very important exercise that I think this I discovered is that it doesn't take a lot if you have your data in place to actually go to Z as long as you know people, like what is Z essentially.
So I imagine you did the early work on the property prediction, and then I've seen a couple of public results on the expression profile. For example,
I should tell you guys this first is that everything that you see out there is not what we do. Actually, we do a whole lot of things. It's just tip of iceberg that you see out there.
When you look at it's a fast moving field and a lot of people are interested. Some people have the management buy-in like you, which is good. Some not. From your vantage point, how do you see your team, the impact of AI within AbbVie changing or growing over time, 3 years, 5 years from now? And to give you a little bit context, when you look at it, suppose, you know, it used to be 0% of all biologics pipeline driven by AI. Now that number is 10%. Do you see that increasing? Do you see that changing? Do you see it more focusing on small molecules or a completely different part of the development cycle?
I think that's part of what is released next. For example, it's driven by market many ways, like what is more the taste of the town kind of thing. Somebody releases a small molecule drug that is making billions, then for sure, everybody would like to say, oh, why didn't we do that? And then everybody would be actually going there. And then if somebody does similar thing with biologics, essentially everyone will be like, why don't we do that as well? So it's many times a taste of town, but I think a more important thing is we are in a journey to actually change how traditional drug discovery is done. It's a process. It cannot be done overnight. It's not exactly just AbbVie goal, but it's my like life goal as well, if you may. What I would like to see is down the line, there's a startup that is empowered enough that can do all of these cool drug discoveries without actually requiring millions of dollars to be invested in it, which is again a very small amount of companies get that huge funding done, or essentially empowering or democratizing this process, Because if you think about it, there are very few people who own this process right now, from this end to that end. And those mostly are typically big pharma companies. And there's a good reason for it, because it takes around like $4 billion for a drug to come to market. There is a huge amount of investment that goes into one single drug. There's a lot of time taken actually to do that. So most of the companies have this idea that they would actually develop a drug to a certain point and then sell out to somebody who will take it to the market essentially in many ways. Like lots of startup companies, lots of medium-sized companies also have this kind of like model of business. And there are very few like large pharma companies who buy all of these things and then try to take it to the clinical trial process, regulatory process, and then down the line. But I think truly, if we empower every part of the process, where rather than actually, so suppose if your scientist can make 10 small molecules or some like two biologics antibodies that they can, what if machine learning can give you like two more or biologic space or for small molecule, like 10 more or 100 more? Essentially, the idea still remains same. Most of the work that big pharma does is to de-risk the process. And the idea still remains same, to de-risk the process, that if you fail in some point, you don't have to just scratch the whole program. You have to then have another option that you can actually bring in and do stuff like that. But again, as I said, it's a process. It cannot be done overnight. You have to show results. There has to be some amount of buy-in for sure. And then only you can change the way drug discovery is done. But that's what is essentially my life goal in general, if you ask me.
So if you were to think, would you say that that 4 billion figure or whatever that might be will come down and some of the process will be more automated and you will see some startups owning the full stack, like in Citro, starting from target all the way to market?
I think so. And that's what the hope is for future. And right now, as I said, it's a very, very monopolized market. And also this market is very much like, we are not curing a lot of disease just because it's not beneficial to us right now. There's a whole amount of like rare disease that people do not actually delve into, a lot of like big companies, because where is the market? Like, how many people are going to actually buy this and stuff like that? Is it like financially right for you to do that and stuff like that? They should democratize the process enough. Hopefully that 4 billion would come down to a certain level that it's financially viable enough to actually do some of those explorations that you were not doing. The other thing is that 10 to 15 years of time for a drug to come to market, I want to actually reduce that time as well. Of course, there are a lot of things you cannot reduce. For example, once it goes to clinical trial, there are very few things you can actually tweak to make it faster, because it has to go at its own pace. But during the drug discovery and preclinical cycle, there are a lot of places where you can reduce from 3 to 6 years of time that normally it takes right now to make it like 1.5 years. It's essentially, a 10-year thing will actually become a 5 year for a drug to come to market, which is a huge, I would say, accomplishment in general, if you can do that. That's the hope. But as I said, it's a process. It cannot happen instantly. It cannot happen overnight. And it has to change within, actually, because if you try to change something by force, this drug discovery process, in many ways and form, it will be met with a lot of like opposition, like, why should I do this or why should I do that? But I think the most scientific way is essentially, everybody is a scientist. As long as you show them data, as long as you show them the right information that they need, I think it sells for itself.
We got one question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What's the role of chemistry scientist who has done a PhD in chemistry, bioactive molecule synthesis in bioinformatics? And I think if you want to just maybe take another step back and think whether the roles of the current scientists and other parts of a big pharma, do they have to change, redefine their job descriptions? Now there's this new paradigm of machine learning being part of the discovery, and how?
I think I equate this kind of thing to how calculators were introduced in our world. There was a point of time when those engineering calculators didn't exist. People used to memorize all the tables for 2, 13, all of those things. They would actually have to do multiplication by hand, division by hand. Of course, they should still practice that, by the way. In a very similar sense, actually, AI is essentially, and it will change the way you do things. A chemist, a bioinformatics person, a person who is a pure biologist doing wet lab assay. I'm not saying that they will need to do machine learning, but essentially they should be machine learning aware down the line. And faster they do it, better it'll be for their, in general, progress in future. Because as somebody's told me, like I was in a conference where, again, similar kind of panel discussion we were doing. And then a person, a gentleman from a big tech company told me, which I always remember, it rings in my brain, is that technology may not be, like pharma companies may not be in business of technology, but technology will be in their business very soon. And that's true, actually. You are a chemist, you are a bioinformatics person, you are a biologist, you're a mathematician, you are a physicist. It's your strength. Essentially, that's your trait. Nobody's out there to actually replace your exact trait, but you have to be aware enough to actually see what tool exists out there or what kind of collaboration you can do with a machine learning scientist so that they both grow together, actually, in that sense. And that's how I feel, and that's how we do it here as well. Any project that we take up, we have a counterpart medicinal chemists who are there with us to actually give their information, and we give our information to them, essentially. So it's an open team meeting kind of environment, brainstorm it, chemists, machine learning people all together. And they have something that we don't understand enough because people can only be PhD in machine learning. They cannot be PhD in machine learning and chemistry. Or they have some, and we have something that they don't understand enough. So it's both a mutual collaboration. And that's how I think that right now, that's how it will keep going. And then eventually there'll be a time when chemistry education itself, there'll be machine learning that they will be taught, like some version of machine learning or how to use machine learning as a tool. Like, for example, in computational chemistry, they already have different tools, and every new generation of computational chemists learn on new kind of tools actually that they can use for their computational chemistry. So in a very similar sense, essentially, I think everybody will have some version of education in terms of like what machine learning can do for you. And then, of course, it can be or cannot be useful in whatever you do right now.
Do you have a program within AbbVie to address that, to kind of retrain or to continue that training of the people so that they can speak both languages, both biology and computer?
That's actually a good question. We are thinking like that because, frankly, we have realized that it's almost like new religion, right? To spread a new religion, you have to actually have representatives that you spread out within the organization that spread the education of things. So I think that's the process we are adopting, which is essentially have representatives within different, like medicinal chemistry org. The whole org can have, each site can have one representative whom we will impart whatever like we develop, and we can brainstorm with them what we want to develop in future as well. And then they are the gatekeepers and the knowledge bearers of all the machine learning that then they will impart to their respective sites and respective projects. As I said, it's a process. We have to still implant some more machine learning people within the organization to be that bridge, because right now we are acting as a bridge as well as a development arm, which is actually, frankly, it's very difficult to do. And I think if the bridge is established, then the transportation from one site to another will be like superfluous.
Okay. Are you imagining a future where you have a team of hundreds?
I'm not sure. The thing is, this technology changes very fast. And as I said, we have to be on par with technology every time. For example, there's a very good chance that machine learning itself will become like more of like a stale food, if you may call it. And then eventually like quantum plus machine learning would be the next rage or something like that. So I think how I would like my team especially to be is more the cutting edge of it. So essentially whatever comes first need not be machine learning. If it's quantum computing, then so be it, actually. But we should be first to try it out, actually, or we should be confident enough to try it out. If it takes 20 people, really good. If it takes 100 people, why not?
Thank you. Do you have any call to action to the audience? So that might be expanding the team, asking for collaborations or anything else?
Well, right now I have two openings in my team. As I said, we started with 3 people. Now we are around 15, 20 people. It'll just keep expanding. Still, we say no to like almost half of the people actually who ask us to do something just because we can't. This is just too small of a team to do address drug discovery as a problem statement. So as I always say that we are always on lookout for somebody who is interested in this. And I think the more important thing is passion for this, because everybody who is in my team is passionate for this particular job that they want to do. They can work in Google and Facebook any day, actually. They are so smart that that's like a piece of cake. In fact, probably they'll be like, I would even go to say that wasting their talent there, but nonetheless, they can go and do that then and maybe like get big bucks that big tech has to offer to them. Because that's another advantage or disadvantage of pharma, if you say, is that we are slow, but we are very deliberate, whatever steps we take. And we do not actually even like do the hire and fire thing kind of thing. Actually, we normally hire people, we keep them because there is a project 10 years down the line that we envision that something has to be done actually about it. And as I said, I think passion is the most important factor in here, because there will always be a situation where you can get all the money that you need in the world. But if money is the thing that you want to actually do with machine learning, then I would suggest you go to a big tech or a big finance, like quant research kind of thing. There's a lot of money in there. I'm not saying that if that's the thing that you want, for sure, go for it. But if you want decent money with this passion that you want to actually change how you cure patients, then this is something for you.
And if you have such people in the audience, and I'm sure there would be some, what would be the best way to reach out to you?
Sure. You can reach out to me through LinkedIn. I think that's the best way you can reach out to me. I have an app as well. So normally I see it quite frequently. Unfortunately, I receive a lot of LinkedIn messages. So, I mean, you would like, I'm pretty sure you guys do as well. There's a priority thing. Like if there is a fire burning, then you douse it first, then actually reply to somebody who can wait. So that's the process in general. So if I forget replying to you, please don't feel bad about it. I mean, I'm very sorry if I ever do that. And I know that I do that. In fact, for the email as well, the problem is that the number of emails and the number of LinkedIn messages I get is just too many. And I do not want to take my time out of science to just do that. Maybe like I need somebody to do that, but right now I don't have.
Thank you very much for that. Abhishek, I want to thank you one more time. On behalf of the audience, it was a pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
So thank you very much for dialing in. Talk to you soon. Bye now.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Future of Drug Discovery, brought to you by Murat, co-founder and CEO at Antiverse, and the production team here at Antiverse. We value your support immensely, and to help us continue growing this vibrant community, we kindly ask you to like, rate, and review the podcast. Your feedback fuels our mission for a better connected community. This episode is a recording of our monthly live events. After each event, we host a private 90-minute networking session where the most fruitful conversations are had. It's the perfect opportunity to meet other members of the community and to connect with industry experts in the field. To be notified about our future events, you can follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter, or opt in for email updates using the form in the episode show notes. We hope to see you at our next event. Until next time.